Thanks, George.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot, George.
Okay, thank you.
Well, here it is, another AA meeting, and as you heard, the only reason I'm here tonight is because I was asked to speak, and obviously I said yes. That was probably a propitious word to say, and I don't speak that often, and if my mind goes blank. So I was kind enough to give me a list of questions that I could probably hit on as I tell my story. So if my mind goes blank, I still have these. So this is going to be a piece of cake. You know, these are some very, very interesting questions, and I appreciate it. Now I'll try to hit them or make sure they're covered, even though my story may not hit them all. It's important, I guess, to start at the beginning, and I'm trying to figure out. In my childhood, I drank a little bit, you know, when I was even before a teenager, because there was wine around, and I remember tasting it and drinking a little bit and drinking no more. Then so it wouldn't be discovered that that's what I was doing. I somehow knew at that time that I wasn't supposed to be drinking this the bottle. So my mother had problems with iron, I think, and that was one of the solutions. But she wasn't much of a. So anyway, that's I'm trying to figure out where to start. Actually, that seems like it's kind of strange, but I'm. Eventually, I wound up in the military. I was drafted during the Korean crisis, and I wanted. I didn't like the idea of the army, and I thought I would just outsmart them. And I joined the Navy because I thought that was a cut above the army. And I remember. Everybody. Drank, and I made sure that I made it back to the ship, and I didn't like the idea of getting what we used to call knee-walking drunk. I always stayed on my feet, and we would, and there was some pretty exciting things. I spent some time on Sand Street in Brooklyn, if anybody knows anything about New York. I spent some time in Boston, Scully Square, sawdust on the floor of the bars, and the women were interesting. One lady knocked somebody out sitting next to me because he said something, and I said, "Hey, this, you know, I wanted to avoid any kind of. I wanted to have fun when I was up at shore, and I remember I messed up on an inspection. The whites I was wearing were too short, my shoes weren't shine, and I looked really scruffy, and I got told about it. So I thought, well, maybe too much party, and I needed to settle down a little bit. So I did knuckle down. I got a couple ratings, got to be a second class. I went to school, they sent me to school, and I said, I want to work with machinery. So they sent me to machinery school. I wound up a boiler tender. You know, I had some experience with, and I did work with machinery, but I also had to work with the bilges. You know, and that was I thought that was I did pretty well on some of the tests before I was in preparation for going in the Navy, and so they had this big draft of people that might become air. Navy pilots. Oh, that's great, I thought. So, but at the time I was wearing glasses, so I mean, there was about 200 of us, and 150 of us were knocked out of that right away, you know, so I didn't get to be a Navy pilot. I tell somebody, once in a while I tell people I was an Annapolis graduate, and that's true. I did graduate from the Annapolis Grammar School. When I dropped that, people's eyes get wide, you know, and then I correct them. Sometimes you like to poke fun at things. And let's see, now, when Just quarter. Well, I did get. There was a time when I wouldn't drink, but I would go ashore and I remember in Boston there was a Baptist church at the top of the hill there somewhere near where all these revolutionary people were buried, and we could always get a breakfast on Sunday morning if you were willing to sit through the prayers and the readings and everything. But they gave me a New Testament, and I remember after the ship was outfitted and a lot of time was spent on improving this function of this pretty large ship, thousands of people there, four or five mess halls and everything. And when there was a squadron, it was an aircraft carrier, and I was, so I had a lot of, once they got things fixed up the way they want, then we did a lot of steaming. We spent a lot of time out to sea, so I had a lot of time. And so I spent some time reading this New Testament. But I remember I had a hard time figuring out, now, do I pray to God, or do I pray to Jesus, or do I pray to the Holy Spirit? And there was a lot of other things I had questions about. It was a lot of confusion. But for some strange reason, and it probably started when I was in elementary school, I said, when I get out of here, and I had no intention of staying in after 4 years were up, I decided to go into the ministry. I would become a minister, a pastor. And I had relatives in the family on my mother and my wife's side who were in the business, and they helped me, and I was surprised at how easy it all worked out. When I got out, I went to college to get the degree, to get to seminary, to get jump through all the hoops it needed to do, that was my plan. When I get out, I will take advantage of this GI Bill of Rights and I'll go to college, and I managed to do that. And it was. In earlier years, I wasted a lot of time and effort in high school. I took the ag course, and we didn't have to do math or reading or any English. We judged cows, and we went out and we pruned trees, and we had a good time. And it wasn't until the last year of high school, somebody, the principal, said, you know, you ought to kind of take some little bit more sound courses, and you know, you have more potential, so I wound up working a little bit harder in the last year of high school, so there were periods of time when I didn't drink all that much in the military, and there were times I drank a lot, and I got into some difficulties like everybody else, but not as much probably as some of my shipmates. And someplace along there, I got married, and I remember going home and sitting on my hands for, I would get a 30-day leave, sitting on my hands and not smoking a single cigarette or drinking a single beer or anything, because my in-laws, future in-laws, did not smoke or drink. They were very, very, very straight-laced Methodists. So I remember going through all that, and then I got married, so going into the ministry, that kept me, I took the job seriously, so for 6 years, I didn't drink a drop, but I remember making the decision at some point, I'm not going to do this anymore, and I think maybe my bailiwick or my thing is teaching, because I did have a teaching degree. And I remember the minute I made that decision, I could not keep beer in the refrigerator. And my wife was, bless her soul, she thought, well, you can have beer in the house, but I don't want any liquor. I started buying beer, and I started to buy the liquor, and she threw all that out. So obviously, she didn't know much about alcohol or, you know, alcoholism at that time, or she wouldn't have said that. Because I remember through the years, I would. She started counting what I was drinking, so maybe I was having a drinking problem, because I used to. I used to go out well, there was a place where you could keep beer in the back room and keep it cool. And this was in upstate New York. It would get pretty cold in the wintertime. But I'd get something out of the refrigerator, and I learned to kick the refrigerator the same time I pulled the flip top off. And that way she wouldn't know that I'm still walking around with the same can of beer. You know, she thought that was a way to keep her from counting. But I think what got me into AA was, every once in a while I'd ask the bartender somebody, like, you know, do you think I have a drinking problem? And he'd say, no, you don't. So I went with that. But I did get to be a teacher, and I got tenure. And I remember it was around January, at the end of the Christmas holidays, I used to really relax and have a good time during vacations, you know, like Christmas and holidays. And so I did get through New Year's, and there was a day where there was some kind of a working day, but yet there was no school, no class, and I worked right up till noon. I figured, I'm hungry. And I went to my favorite bar for a bite to eat, and I remember deciding, well, you know, this is instead of beer, let's kick it up a notch with some what's the name of the next? I can't even remember the name of that. It's not exactly beer, but it's got a little bit more alcohol in it, and I can't even remember. Ale, that's it. Good. So I, give me a can of ale, and then I'll have one of those sandwiches, and then that was my lunch hour, and I was supposed to go back to work, but I never, once I had a little mellow feeling, it's awful hard to go back to work, and I know I didn't, I just didn't go back. And one of my buddies came in. He definitely had a drinking problem. His family was very wealthy in that town, and they had a furniture factory. And he wound up in the shipping department instead of being a partner in the business. But anyway, it was good to see him. And then he invited me to his home. And he was a wonderful host. He would give me my drink and tea glass, but it would be full of whiskey, you know, and that's the way he drank, so I drank the same way. That's went on for quite some time. Sometimes during that period of time, I remember I used to like the idea of socializing not just the male people in the bar, but the females. So I used to call them the dancing girls, you know. And I would, for some reason or other, I got out of the habit. I'm sure I'd have to be drunk to do something this stupid. I would take my wedding ring off because that would make me more saleable. And I remember, this was a red flag, because my brother-in-law and I were good friends. And when I was in the ministry, I'd go to his house and he'd offer me beer, no. But once I decided I was, I didn't need to keep that commitment anymore, we would have a few beers at his home as a host. But one night I was in the bar. I don't remember which bar it was, but my brother-in-law was there, and so we sat down and we were talking away, and I said, well, let me buy this one. So I reached in my pocket and I pulled out some change, and in the middle of the change was my wedding ring. And to this day, I don't know if he ever, realized that was his sister's wedding ring, and I quickly grabbed that and put it in there. So I thought, that's... Wow. Anyway, and the wedding ring really has there's a link to there's another chapter to that, that at this friend's house that I was drinking the tea glass full of soda, so and so was coming over, a female, and I thought, well, that's great. So I must have taken my wedding ring at that time. And I didn't get home. A lot of times I wouldn't get home at a decent hour. And eventually I probably got home in the wee hours of the night. It was a small town. It was like five people per square mile in that town. So there wasn't any problem with police or anything like that. Anyway, I got home. And the next day I'm sitting at the table and I used to look into my coffee cup. I remember looking in there and you could see the light in the ceiling. And I just focus on that light in the ceiling. And it kind of helped with that, what do they call, hangover. And all of a sudden my wife says, "Bill, your wedding ring, where is your wedding ring?" Well, I looked down at my hand, you know, and it wasn't there. And I thought, oh my God, what? I knew exactly where it was. So I excused myself and I said, "I'd be right back." And I left the house. And I went to this, they lived in a really nice house because they were successful business people. And they helped me look all over. And I'm pretty sure he found the ring and he just probably put that away to hock when he wanted more money. But I never found the wedding ring. And I came back and of course, there was a discussion, and part of that discussion was, you know, "You're finished. You know, talk about finishing school." She said, "You've got to move out. You know, you just I." So I realized that there was something serious about this, and so I said, "Well, I'll join AA." And she put the phone in my hands, and I remember the conversation. "Well, the mere fact that you're calling probably indicates to me that you are having a problem with drinking." And he gave me nobody came to visit me or anything. I went to my first meeting, and I know I never said anything at that meeting. I don't think I said a word. And I definitely didn't say, "I'm an alcoholic." I didn't. Those were probably the most important words I ever said in my life. And I probably should have started out with my talk, because my name is George, and I am an alcoholic. And if I don't say anything else more important than that, you know, those are the most important words to me. So I almost got out the door without, you know, unobtrusively, and
Where did you hear of AA?
Okay, good. So I didn't think I'd have much to say, but thought it would be a 20-minute talk. But
keep going, George. But I just wanted to say, where did you hear about AA?
I don't know where I heard. I used to read Reader's Digest every once in a while. There'd be an article in there about the problems, and I honestly don't know why I said that or where I got the idea. But I figured a new refrigerator, or when I get into difficulty, I would probably, you know, some difficulties warranted a new refrigerator, some new dryer, or something like that. So I figured, well, this is really big here, and I guess that's why I said, well, I'll join AA. And I did go to the meetings, and it was probably weeks or months before I actually said I was an alcoholic, before I began to realize that I was having a problem with alcohol. And so that was the way it was. And I had to travel. The town I lived in was about 30, 35 miles from the nearest meeting. It was a dry town, and I did a lot of driving in the first few years to get to meetings. And AA, what was AA like, Ben, then? I thought that's an interesting question. There were very few discussion meetings. I did not go to discussion meetings. There might have been one a week, and I thought those people talked in tongues or so. They were just so, it was such a confusing thing to go to, and it was just straight, usually two speakers. If you got up for and accepted a year's chip, you had to figure that you were going to be speaking the next week, and not only that you would be chairing meetings, and you would be. So that was the way it was. And has AA changed much? Well, there's no ashtrays to clean now if you're new. I was at a meeting one time in Ithaca, New York, and a college town, and it was well attended, and everybody was smoking. And the next thing you know, the fire department comes trudging in with axes and hoses and everything, because we set the smoke alarm off. And so that's one big change. The AA has made, and that's one way how it has changed. Is it any better? Is AA any better? That's an interesting question. The people. I think I would say it's pretty much the same in many respects. People are just as friendly now as they ever were. The principles are the same. Nothing that the steps haven't changed. The traditions haven't changed, and it is better for me anyway than I think than it is. It's like asking, is the sun any better than it was yesterday? To me, it's like, of course I'm better. I think I have the feeling that there isn't anybody here that doesn't want me to succeed in life, to live a successful, productive life. I have friends, and that's never changed. No matter where you go, you find a meeting, and a meeting is a place where people are, they like you, and they're looking out for your welfare. And I try to do the same thing. It is better. If it's changed, I think it's more important for me to just say, in my opinion, I have changed. And I continue to change, and I don't. I want to be around for the next 10 years, and I think there's people think, I have 50 years, and I would want to make that bigger and be a part of this fellowship for the next 10 years or more. And I know that there are other people that will be here 10 years from now and be just better and happier. And the only message that I can think, what was the message? What is the message? It is stop for me. Stop drinking. I did, and I never started again. And I don't know how that happened. I don't know exactly when I began to realize, that I had all that many years. I didn't realize I've reached maybe what you might call celebrity status. That's a real challenge to my humility. So, is it any better? Absolutely, it's better. And it will continue to get better because we will continue to get better. And I'm not a full hour talker. I know that. But, where did I hear of AA? God only knows. The main thing is I did hear. And the main thing is... And other people somehow or other going to hear about AA, and I don't, we don't advertise, we don't promote, but if you throw a stick out there, it's quite possible you're going to hit somebody that needs this program or knows somebody that needs this program. It's that way, and it has it changed. It's just, I think it's just bigger. There's more meetings. I'm surrounded by meetings, and it wasn't always that way. And some meetings were quite a distance. And they were, and some of the buildings where I used to go, they're not there anymore. But I've been coming here for 40 years or more because my mom lived here, and I would come down and visit her. And so this is her legacy, Florida. I like Florida. I don't miss the snow or the snowmobile. I haven't had a ride on a snowmobile in a long time, and I don't care. Okay, that's thank you.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Yep.